So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Hello and good evening. This is Stacy Trisankos in on this Marriage Thursday for Timory, who is still at home enjoying her new little bundle, her new little girl bundle. And I'm, as always, so honored to be here and to share the this hour with you. So it's marriage on Thursday that we talk about. And to be perfectly honest, this is a little outside of my usual talking. Although, like I said before, it's not outside of what I talk about most of the time during the day, dealing with my seven kids and my, you know, my marriage and living my life. I just don't talk about it in writing and speaking a lot because I do faith and science, but I always apply my faith and what we're learning, what the theological truths of the Catholic Church tell us about how to live our lives. I'm always applying it the same way we apply what we learn in chemistry to better living, right? To make stuff. So it all has to fit together. And so I love talking about marriage, and it's not just marriage. So if you're not married and you're listening to this, that's okay. What marriage is a very, very intimate relationship. And that's really what we're going to talk about is relationship, okay? The hardest relationships to forge because you get so close. It's that total vulnerability, total giving of self. It's not like you're in control of a whole lot when you get in a very close relationship. And it gets at the core of who we are and what we are as humans because God made us to be in relationship. And hey, I got news for you in case you didn't already figure it out. Relationships are hard. It's hard enough to practice virtue for yourself. But when you are bonded to someone else, whether it's a parent, a child, a relative, a friend, when you're bonded to someone else, you're not in total control of everything, are you? And so talking about, then when we talk about marriage and that relationship and that intimacy, we have to talk about God. We have to talk about what Christ revealed to us in the incarnation. So I like to do this thing when we're talking about stuff. So I teach a few classes at Seton Hall University, and I absolutely love working with college students because they are beyond the teenage years, but into that phase of life where they're really adulting, you know, they're really starting to, you're really starting to get what it means to have these higher abstract thoughts and put, that's why you go to college, right? So I love teaching about this stuff. And oddly enough, I am a chemist, but I teach a class called about the interiority, about organizing and ordering our interior lives. And I teach a class about Catholic conversion. So some days I wake up, I'm like, how did I get to do that? How did I get to this point? Well, it's because of being open to the will of God all throughout life. So in the spirit of synthesizing information, the same way a chemist might synthesize atoms into molecules, I love putting things together. And that's where the trending part comes in. I love taking the ancient truths of the church and classic literature of the church. Today, it's going to be Fulton Sheen and his Three to Get Married, and applying that to modern issues. It's really fascinating. So if you get nothing else out of this today, I hope you see this new creativity where we apply the ancient to the new, because it's all about being human and working our way towards heaven. So to draw the contrast, it's more fun when things are really contrasting. We're going to spend quite a bit of time. So I'm going to put the professor hat on a little bit. But hey, you got to know that when I teach my classes, I consider it an enormous responsibility to keep the attention of the students. So I don't waste their time. You know, wouldn't that be great? Professors don't waste students' time. I don't waste their time. And whatever I have to say, I'm really trying hard to say something that you will find useful. My kids probably wouldn't agree I always achieve that, but I do try. So I want to go through the chapter in Fulton Sheen's book, Three to Get Married. In case you haven't heard of that, and in case you've heard it a million times, let me just remind you. He means by that, it takes three to make love in heaven, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It takes three for heaven to make love to earth, God, man, and Mary, through whom God became man. It takes three to make love in the Holy Family, Mary, Joseph, and the consummation of their love, Jesus. It takes three to make love in the hearts, the lover, the beloved, and love. So when you apply it to marriage, of course, it's man, woman, and Christ. It takes three to get married. So I'm going to give you a review of one of the later chapters in that book. It's called The Dark Night of the Body. Okay, not the dark night of the soul, although it is standing in contrast and similarity to the dark night of the soul. But specifically here, he's talking about the dark night of the body. And I want to go through what that means, because married or not, in relationships of any kind, even just journeying through life, we all go through a dark night of the body. I don't care whether you are the most orthodox, faithful, daily mass going Catholic out there, or whether you're an atheist. We all go through something called the dark night of the body. It's just that unless you have the language to make sense of it, you probably think you're about to die. And I mean that. It can seem very, very desperate. But it's simply one of these times when God's asking us to grow. So we'll talk about what that means. It's one of these things in Catholicism that is so liberating. Okay, it's something that people don't understand or talk about very much in our society when it comes to marriage, because they're not Catholic. If everybody would be Catholic. No, but it's because it's not taught. It's not something that's brought from ancient, you know, from classic literature. Fulton Sheen wasn't ancient, of course, but he relied on teaching before his time as well. It's always building on things. It's not brought into the modern day. And I don't know when in your life you would actually read a book called Three to Get Married. At the St. Philip Institute, we have a program called Three to Get Married that Deanna Johnston, our family life director, organizes, a program for engaged couples to go through some of these concepts. But other than that, it's really not taught. It's like you don't have a class on this in high school. You don't have a course on this in college. You're kind of left without the language to understand a pretty normal period of despair in the maturation process of any human being. So we're going to go through that. I want to go through some of the basic concepts because it's that vital. But then we're going to switch gears and talk about an article that popped up in my inbox the other day, providentially, about how the U.S. divorce rates are soaring during COVID-19. You're probably thinking, yeah, I can see that. What everything else is flying out the window with COVID-19, why shouldn't marriage? There is actual data from Legal Templates, an online service that allows people to go online and file for divorce. I know it's horrible. And they can get immediate data that we would otherwise have to wait years to gather from lawyers and court trials and all of that. They can get data immediately just based on the number of people filing for divorce using their legal templates online. And it's up by a lot among newlyweds. So I would say one of the most important things we need to do today is to try to understand why this is happening. Because if you're Catholic, you're not spared from this kind of despair. Since you're seeking the truth, the full truth, you might even make things harder on yourself sometimes because you're not afraid to face the truth, and you don't get to go through life with your blinders on pretending you can't face the bigger questions. You go face the bigger questions every time you go to Mass. So I think sometimes being Catholic can be harder for us because we're not afraid of the truth, and the truth can be pretty demanding. And after we put those two things together, I also just want to finish up today with a sweet little article that was in Alatia I think that's how you say it. Sometimes I say Alicia, but that's not exactly right. A-L-E-T-I-A. There's a sweet article that is in that. It's a secret that really nobody knows how to pronounce that. So we all know what it looks like when we read it, but saying it out loud is another story. There's a sweet little article about empathy, and that's something I talked about a few days ago. You see how I'm putting everything together? It's like a whole system of thought, this Catholicism. The author had something about empathy and the incarnation, and I want to just get back to something refreshing before we end the show, to take this term that we use called empathy that is really hard. Don't you wish everybody could try to see the world through your own eyes? Yeah. Well, we're supposed to be trying to do that with other people too. And it's hard. It's hard. I've got 7 kids and they're all so different. And I have to see the world through their eyes to be able to help guide them in life. And let me tell you something. It's a lot of work. It's extremely rewarding because they're beautiful young people. But even as a professor with all the students I have, I try to get to their center and look through the world through their eyes. And so there's a whole lot of people I'm trying to look at the world through their eyes. I'm trying to look at the world through your eyes right now. And it just kind of makes your life interesting, and your wheels are always turning. So that's the shape of the show today. I almost said soul. That's the shape of the show today. With a little music thrown in along the way too, a surprise for you. So the dark night of the body. I'm just going to get into this a little bit before we go to the break in a few minutes. But if you've got this book, maybe you want to go grab it even. Go grab the book or look it up online. You can get the Kindle version, which I highly recommend. Go to that chapter, The Dark Night of the Body. And he starts talking here about pleasure and joy. And I've heard Timory talk about happiness and joy and the difference in the two. And it is something very significant. One of the greatest mistakes, he starts out with, one of the greatest mistakes the human heart can make is to seek pleasure as a goal of life. And he gives an analogy, it's often used, and it's a great analogy, of a boy eating ice cream. I use donuts with my kids because they like donuts. Here in Texas, you can get donuts with Fruit Loops on them. No kidding. I use donuts. If you're hungry, if you have a natural, this is natural, right? We get hungry. Our bodies need food. We have a hunger. If you eat a good meal, and I wouldn't call a donut a good meal, but my kids would. If you eat a good meal and it satiates your hunger, you're happy. You're satisfied. You ate to fill a need. And that's the way it's supposed to work. But if you eat the whole box of donuts just because you want nothing more than the taste, you're not going to feel happy. You might feel some pleasure while you're chomping on those donuts and swallowing them, but you're not going to feel good an hour later. And if you live that way, you're really not going to feel good because, speaking like a chemist and the organism of the human body, you eat food so that your body has the chemicals it needs to make more cells and make the proteins that make up your body and keep you alive. And if you don't feed your body the right chemicals that it needs to make, chemicals are just things on the periodic table. I'm not using that word, like, God forbid, some people talk about chemicals like they're terrible things. They're not. If you eat the right chemicals, the right ingredients for your body to make cells in a healthy way, then your body will thrive. And if you don't, your body will get sick. And so you need to fill that natural need that your body has. So take it into marriage. We don't marry to enjoy pleasures of the flesh. We enjoy the pleasures of marriage. Okay, this is just a slight rewording there, but it's everything. We enjoy the pleasures of marriage because one fulfills to the utmost the functions and obligations of the married state. Fulton Sheen says, the good man seeks a woman to complement, C-O-M-P-L-E-M-E-N-T, his imperfection, and to work towards mutual achievement. The evil man wants to immolate a woman in order to enjoy himself. Immolate means to sacrifice her, to destroy her, consume her, in order to enjoy himself. So there's a difference there. And you have to keep that in mind. Now, I've been there on the front end of marriage. You're like, oh, of course, of course. Of course, that's why, you know, it's not going to be all about me. I'm going to give everything to this man. I'm going to cook for him and iron his shirts, and I'm going to make him so happy. It gets a little more complicated than that as life goes on. And just to give you an example of the donuts and the ice cream in marriage, and something other than sex, because that analogy is used a lot. If the woman is just doing all these things to sort of check the boxes and make it look like her home is perfect and her marriage is perfect, if you're just giving to make yourself feel good, then you're consuming the other. You're just using the other person to make yourself feel good. And so it is something, speaking for myself, like I've said before, coming into faith from being a chemist where I just thought you made people bond like you make atoms bond, just put the right two people in the room and hey, they'll get married and whatever. I didn't really understand the human person, soul. And I did do this, so I'm speaking from experience here, but I see it a lot too, working with people. The woman is not really, and the man can do this too, I'm just using the woman because I am a woman. The woman is really using the marriage to fulfill her own ego. When I was talking about grace the other day and drinking the water, that it's like taking the grace in is like drinking the water in. And sometimes we just hold up our tall glass of water in the air and shake our head back and say, hey, look at me. I am so holy. I've got all this water. But you're not drinking it in. You're missing the whole point. You're just showing off. It can happen like that in a marriage too. And so that is one way we can approach a dark night of the body. There are other ways. There are so many other ways that we can approach a dark night of the body. And it gets into a lot bigger things. And, you know, I'm talking about your ego and getting things out of the marriage to make yourself feel good when you're really not thinking about what the other person needs and you're really not trying to look at the world through the other person's eyes. There's all kinds of little one-liners we have in our culture now. You've probably heard people say, you know, you're married to your ideal of a man, your ideal man, but you're not married to the real man you've got. Like you're loving an idea, an ideal. You're loving the idea of an ideal, but you're not loving the real. And it's very sobering. Fulton Sheen gets into this later in the chapter when he starts talking about disillusionment and a crisis of nothingness. But these are very common concepts in the world we live in today. So there has to be, and this is what we tell young married couple, engaged couples about to get married. There has to be an expectation and an understanding that you are going to grow and mature in love. And there's going to be some pain. There's going to be some disillusionment. And this is where a lot of people jump off the rails and say, I want to find another spouse. I want to find somebody else. And this is kind of where our whole world is just truncated in the Fuller logic. People don't realize there is something on the other side. That when you get beyond this dark night of the body, there's something on the other side. And that's better. That's more mature. And they just give up. And they're surrounded by people who will say, yep, the whole universe is telling you to get a divorce. That's what you need to do. You just need to move on and get rid of that man. And you need to make sure you're happy. And what they're doing is telling them, you need to eat this whole darn box of donuts. Okay? It's a lie. It's a lie. So I want to drive that point home just as hard as I can. And I want to compare it to when we come back after the break, getting ready to go here. I want to compare it to some things that C.S. Lewis said too. So I have my students read C.S. Lewis's Surprised by Joy because they're surprised by what he says. And I teach at Seton Hall, but not all of my students are Catholic or even Christian. I have a lot of of students who are atheists in my class, but they have to take these courses. And so we talk, they are always delighted to read C.S. Lewis, especially when he's talking about joy, surprised by joy. What does that mean, joy? So I want to compare some things C.S. Lewis when we get back. And I also want to talk about being consumed with love like an atom. So I'm going to talk about Adam some more when we get back after the break. I'm Stacy Trusenkos, in for Timory. See you in a few minutes.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hello, this is Stacy Trusenkos in for Timory on Thursday, talking about marriage. Thank you for being here. If you have anything to add to this conversation, I would love to hear from you. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We were talking about Fulton Sheen's Three to Get Married, one of the later chapters, The Dark Night of the Body, and talking and chemistry. We were talking about what all of that means. Going through this chapter, he makes a statement that suffering is in me, but I am not in it. Okay, we were talking about pleasure and joy, and what we mean by saying a dark night of the body. I want to give you a analogy using chemistry, and you know, one of the things that was the most delightful in my whole life was seeing that Fulton Sheen actually talked about atoms in his book Three to Get Married, because I was already thinking about that. I was already like, man, I wish I could have talked to him, because I would have loved to have given Fulton Sheen like a modern chemistry lesson about what we know in our time, what we know about chemistry, because I know he didn't live that long ago, but we've learned a lot since then. And I was delighted that he talked about atoms. And I want to tell you something, because it's a very useful analogy, because it has to do with the fundamental law of our universe and why marriage is so indissoluble, why it breaks people and societies to break marriage. You can't break the indissoluble bond, but you can pretend like you can, and it just wreaks havoc. Fulton Sheen says, "A family without the spirit of sacrifice is only an agglomeration of separate atoms." Squeal. "Is only an agglomeration of separate atoms. They sit in a common refectory, sleep in a common dormitory, but lack all internal relations, which are the condition of family love." Boom. Okay. It's like saying, and there are jokes about it, which I'm not going to repeat here, but there are jokes about the married couple that's lived together so long, they don't really do much but pass each other in the hallway and scowl at each other. But you can have a whole family living this way. So the mother and father are doing this, the children too. You're just living in a loveless household. You're living in the house together, but you are not a family. And see, I think this is one of the most destructive things. If there are couples, God bless them, who white knuckle it through marriage, and they don't ever talk about their problems, because like I was talking before the break, of an ego that they want to appear perfect. Now this happens a lot down here in Texas. They want to appear perfect, and so they have this ego and they have this facade where they white knuckle it and put a smile on their face and live in the same house, and they might even have dinner together, they might even go to mass together. They're roommates, the whole family, not just mom and dad, but even the kids. And the kids grow up with this very distant, non-communion type of family. And you're in this house. And what happens in the modern day, this is just Stacy Trusenkos talking. I mean, I haven't really read this anywhere, but I've just observed. People are afraid to talk about their problems. You get on Facebook or Instagram and you post all these pretty pictures You go out to the grocery store, your kids go to school, you just want to talk it up and look perfect. And I've noticed that everybody else's family seems to be perfect, while meanwhile, my kids are crazy. Don't tell them I said that. Our family is like duking it out some days. And so the analogy with atoms is, if your family is just sitting around, like, it doesn't work like that in chemistry. If you just go into the lab and you put a bunch of different atoms in a different place and say, look, I made something. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. Atoms have to bond. And when they bond, they have to give and they have to receive. They do. I'm serious. Take my chemistry class sometime. They have to give and they have to receive. You have atoms that are very stable. I mean, atoms on the periodic table, all the atoms on the periodic table, all the periodic table is atoms. They're very stable because there's a balance between the positive charge in the nucleus and the arrangement of electrons in their orbits and their energy levels whizzing around the nucleus. They're negatively charged. And so there is literally a balance that stabilizes the atom. But when two atoms come together, the nucleus of one atom that's positive sees the negative electrons on another atom, and they're like, hey, I really like your electrons. Why don't we share? And you can have atoms with different temperaments. Some atoms want to share more than give. Some atoms want to take. Some atoms want to give, and that's all they want to do. Like, we're talking about ionic bonds versus covalent bonds. And it depends on each atom's properties, temperament, if you will. And a chemist has to know about these things, and then you can just use God's Legos and make stuff. But when two atoms come together and bond, there is a difference of energy. There's a stability. They don't come too close where their nuclei hit, because they're all positive and that would just be disastrous. But they come close enough to intertwine their electron orbitals so much they become molecular orbitals, and they form something new. And it's like three to form a chemical bond. You know, you've got two atoms and you've got the energy that's shared between them. We could call it love. But that's really what happens, and they do make something new. It is a new substance. It's two literally become one substance in chemistry when you do that. And it messes things up if you just separate them and lay them on the table and put them in the same vicinity, but they don't actually do the work of bonding and reaching that stability. And there's something called activation energy. You can't just show them to each other and they bond. Sometimes the reaction's not spontaneous. There's a certain amount of energy you have to give to get something to happen. You've seen this anytime you've tried to do a fire, okay? Like make a fire. Have you ever tried to make, you should if you haven't, tried to build a campfire or a fire in the fireplace? It takes some work. You can't just show a match to a log of wood and expect it to start burning. Sometimes you got to work really hard at getting that flame to go. But once you achieve the activation energy, like once you do the work to get the flames going, there is a stability there among the chemicals. And that's why the energy is given off in the form of a flame. It consumes the wood. And so it is like that. Okay, so I made a lot more out of that analogy than Fulton Sheen did. But I thought he was brilliant there, because it really does work like that. You have to get through. He didn't know about the activation energy, or he didn't write about it. You have to get past that activation energy, and you get into something totally new, a totally new energy state that is more stable than before. It's something new. And you can't just have it by being married for a year. You can't. It's impossible. It's like a physical law of the universe. You can't forge that kind of relationship. And so, yes, there is. So think about that. Just know. So why am I telling you all of this? I'm telling you because when it seems really desperate in a relationship, and especially a marriage, which is one of the most intimate relationships, it's normal. Okay? Fulton Sheen calls it a dryness. We talk about the dryness in the soul when we're feeling in the desert. And there is also a dryness of the body between the two people. Like your body is in the house together, but you're not really two becoming one. And you may even be consummating the marriage You may even be sitting at the table together, but there is such isolation and despair and loneliness. And I'm telling you what, this happens all the time in marriage. You can be married and so lonely. This is why people turn to alcohol or drugs or infidelity or bridge or clubs or busybodiness or escapism, because they're trying to fill that void they know that is missing. Okay. And it is really a dryness. It's a dryness in your spiritual life. There can be a dryness in your bodily life, the dark night of the body. And these aren't bad things. Okay. It's not a bad thing. If you're feeling that, and I do, I feel it some days. I mean, if it helps to know, I feel it too. Some days I've learned to say now, I'm feeling really dark today. I had a day like that yesterday. I just need a moment by myself. I need to talk about something other than COVID-19 and politics, which we talk about in our house a lot. I need to talk about something else. I just need to go to Lowe's and shop for a new bar thingy that goes over the bathtub, because the other one's creeping me out because it's starting to rust. You know, like, I just need to do something else. But I've learned to recognize it, and that is a very healthy thing. I did actually go buy one today. It's black. And it's a healthy thing to recognize. But the reason that you need to know about this is because you need to know it's normal. If you're at that point in your marriage, don't get divorced. Don't even think about divorce. Say, you know what? We're at that point that is a grace. Something good is going to happen if we make it through here. We're like two atoms looking at each other, and our electrons are about to bond us into really two becoming one in a way we've never imagined before. We're about to become a whole new substance. We're about to be lit on fire. This analogy works really well. And so recognize it. If you're feeling that way, push through it. And you could probably think of analogies that fit even with working out, you know, exercising, that you physically have a physiological part of your body that reactions in your body that once you get going and you've been running for a while, it's much easier than it was the first 10 minutes. So that's what he's talking about in the dark night of the soul. And it's beautiful. And I could go on. I only have gone through about half of the chapter. He talks about this as disillusionment. Part of the disillusionment is that fantasy part in early marriage, where it seems so easy and so great. You realize all the dreams you thought you had aren't coming true the way you thought they would. But look, here's the thing that us married folks who are on the other side of this activation energy can tell you. You will find dreams you never imagined that you wanted. I mean, my husband and I have been married for 18 years. We've got four teenage daughters right now. And we just both kind of like blew up our whole life and took on a totally new venture running Children of God for Life, because we want to fight the use of aborted children in research. Like, we believe in this cause very much, and we're doing it together. And I never would have thought we would be working together doing something like this, calling lawmakers, calling industry, calling the companies, fighting for something we believe in and leaving the world a better place for our children. I never would have thought of that. I never would have thought I'd be here talking to you today. But that's the reward of pushing through it. Okay, so I hope you see how beautiful all of that is. And before we go and apply this to divorce and the report that I read, I want to quickly just remind you of something that even Eric Clapton knows. Here is Bell Bottom Blues. Do you wanna see me cry across the board, you? Do you wanna hear me back? Could it take me back? I better do it, because I don't wanna play away. Give me one more day, please. I don't wanna play away. Give me heart, I'm gonna stay. Okay. That song, did you recognize that song? Have you heard it before? It's a classic from Eric Clapton. That song, I Don't Want to Fade Away. There was a time, you know, this there will be moments of grace when you're in that dryness. And there was a time when my husband and I were getting through a hard time like that. And this song came on the radio. And you might laugh, but we were sobbing. I mean, it hit us so hard because it said, I don't want to fade away, because we were both feeling something there. It's like the thought of losing this marriage, like even though it had been hard, and it had been hard, we're like any other married couple in the world. We had problems. We always will have problems. But we were afraid to talk about our problems. And our problems got worse and worse and worse. And our divide got bigger and bigger. And we did push through. Because thank God for Catholicism. Because I said, you know, we both said, we're Catholic, we're married. There's no way out here. We're going to have to figure out what to do. And so we were committed. But we were not happy for a long time because of all these things I've been describing to you. And once we started to understand it and we came back together, that's what God will do for you. That's what the grace will look like sometimes when you drink it in. It's just a moment where all the bad stuff just disappears and you have a moment of clarity. And it was when this song was playing, I Don't Want to Fade Away. And you know, we started to realize that all the things that would be, you know, there were some bad stuff and maybe it'd be easier move. It seemed like it'd be easier just to move on in a different direction for a while, but it wouldn't. And that if we had just split up and gone our separate ways, we would have lost all those memories. Only he was there when my kids were born. You know, he was there when the five of my kids were born, he was there. Cause I had two kids before we met, before I was Catholic. He was there for all of those moments. We had a lifetime of memories that somewhere along the way became our memories. And there were times when nothing else kept us together but the thought of losing those memories. Because if we went our separate ways, they would disappear. They would dissipate. So don't let it fade away. Taking a turn now to, before we go to another break coming up, taking a turn to a really, you know, I don't think it was meant to be heartbreaking, but it is after you heard all the things I just said. The U.S. divorce rates are soaring during the COVID-19 crisis. So some details here. This legal templates company has noticed with growing tensions between couples, they've seen a 34% increase in sales of their divorce agreement compared to the same time period in 2019. So that was in 2020. They are driven by data. These are actual money spent on the divorce legal papers. And the COVID-19 quarantine started destroying marriages in less than 3 weeks. That's when their sales started going up. Newlyweds were hit the hardest because you have to fill out information when you file for one of these documents. Couples in southern states were more likely to seek a divorce. They correlated that to states that had higher rates of COVID-19 outbreak. And that the rate of divorcing couples with children increased compared to 2019. So what's going on here? Put this in our Catholic lens. Look at it with our Catholic glasses on. What's going on here is it's like you put two atoms together and their positive nuclei are coming too close and they didn't get a chance for their electrons to settle into stable orbits around both of them. And they repelled. They repulsed. It was too much throwing together too soon. Everybody's in their houses. They're living together like they never have before. They're stuck at home. They've got the pressure of job loss, illness, the threat of illness, the quarantining, the kids are not in school. And it brought on a dark night of the body like never before. It brought on a dark night of the body that people were not expecting. And I mean, it's already hard enough when it's normal and natural, but when it comes on by something like COVID-19, these little atoms just started running away from each other. And it's not supposed to be like that. They noticed that the longer a couple, see, this is evidence, okay, scientists, this is evidence of what I'm saying. They noticed that 20% were married in 2020, that divorced. 20% of that 34% of marriages were married in just a year. 9% in 2019 and 18, 7% in 2017 and 16, 6% were married in 2015. The point being, the longer a couple had been married, the less likely they were to file for a divorce at this website during COVID-19. So see, just get through it. And you won't just get through one dark night of the body. You'll have a lot. You'll have a lot. Little ones and big ones for various reasons, but you gotta get through it. Okay? I am Stacey Tresankos. I think that we are getting ready for a break. And I will come back after we're done, and I want to talk to you about a lovely little article about empathy and the incarnation that fits with everything we're talking about here.
Relevant Radio is supported by CatholicSingles.com and the Catholic Singles app, the Catholic dating community for single men and women to meet other single Catholics through interactive polls and personalized matches. CatholicSingles.com, genuinely Catholic.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hello, welcome back. This is Stacey Tresankos talking marriage and chemistry and theology and Fulton Sheen and divorce rates spiking during the COVID-19 pandemic. We've got a caller. Mary, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I enjoy your show, and I'm grateful for Relevant Radio. I've listened to a couple of shows on marriage, and have found them very helpful. You may have talked about some resources, and I may have missed that piece of the show, but a group called Retrovi is extremely helpful. My marriage was struggling, and so I had actually heard about Retrovi on Relevant Radio about 6 years ago. So my husband and I went on the weekend, and it was probably why a big part of the reason why we're still married today. So it really turned things around for us. So I thought some of the listeners might appreciate that resource.
Yes, that's Retrovi. Can you spell it, Mary?
I will try.
It's a test. Go ahead.
It's Retrovi, I think.
Yes. That's close enough to search on. I'm not sure either. It looks like it says Retrovail, but you don't pronounce the two L's. So it's Retrovi.
Yeah.
It is. And thank you so much for calling in and telling the audience about that. If you haven't heard of Retrovi before, it is, my husband and I did actually go through this program, and I was thinking about Adams then too, but it's a program about communication. It's where, you learn how to do this thing where you try to see the world through the other person's eyes. And you know, if you're good at this, like, I don't know how you are, because it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to learn to do in my life. Is the empathy thing. But in Christianity and Catholicism, we're not talking about just empathy, like, oh, I know how you feel. Oh, I'm really sorry. I'm trying to empathize with you. It's not a shallow form of empathy. We're talking about the full on getting to the center of the other person so well that you can look out at the world through the other person's eyes. And there was a lovely little piece. It's a very short article, and sometimes those are the best because it's really hard to write a short article. In Aletheia, Aletheia, and it's called "How Putting Yourself in Your Partner's Shoes Is Imitating Christ." Amen. It's one of the most beautiful forms of love. I would say it's necessary for love. That is getting at what love is to be in communion with the other person, that so that you're giving all of yourself to the other person except to be the other person. So you don't stop being yourself. You don't become codependent and use the other person to check your boxes. You don't become codependent and your happiness depends on the other person's doing what you think that person needs to do. It's not that. It is a genuine getting to know the other person. Putting yourself in the other person's shoes is, in fact, one of the most beautiful forms of love, the author says. And compares it to Christ. Christ, this was the greatest form of empathy, was becoming incarnate. Christ was, I'm quoting the article, Christ was God's empathy. Isn't that beautiful? Putting yourself in the place of the other is to enter into their skin, into the other person's skin, to become incarnate in the other person. It's what Christ did at Christmas. He didn't come to visit. He didn't drop in on a helicopter. He became man. He experienced what we experience: hunger, thirst, suffering, and dark night of the body. He experienced all those things. The Word became incarnate. And so with us, a couple of things here. We're not God, right? So our marriage is never going to be like Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It's never going to be like that, but we are always going to long for that. We are never going to be happy until we're resting in God, and we're going to long for it. And so in a sense, you can say your marriage or your relationships are always going to have problems. But, you know, on the one hand, oh, that's a bummer. On the other hand, no, that's what it means to be human and journey towards eternal beatific vision with God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit forever. Eternal happiness. So you're supposed to long for it. You're supposed to hurt when you don't achieve it. You're supposed to work past it and grow in holiness. And this empathy we're talking about here is not just something you're going to get by passing each other in the hallway and sitting at the table every night together. It's not something you're going to get by being with someone in the same house for all those years. It can be very destructive to children to live that way and to never face up to the problems between you, the walls between you in your marriage. It can really destroy children because they learn that distance. They learn that relationships look like that, and they don't. They shouldn't. So don't be afraid to admit if your marriage isn't perfect. It's not supposed to be perfect. Don't be afraid to admit if your relationship with your sister or your parents isn't perfect. Your whole life is reaching out into that void between you and trying to cure it. And there's nothing more joyful. There's nothing that makes us happier. Not in the sense of eating a whole box of donuts, but happier in like having a great steak and a glass of wine and the perfect mashed potatoes finished up with just the right amount of chocolate. There's nothing that makes us satiated like that than to break through to a new level in your relationship. And people who have been successful at being married, you know, at being happily married for a long time can tell you this. You're always doing that. And I do think that you get to a point where you kind of look for those opportunities. That's the good thing. You wake up every day and you're like, carpe diem. I'm going to go out and I'm going to fix some relationship today. That will make you happy. That will make you genuinely happy. If you haven't talked to a sibling in a long time because there's a rift between you, just pick the phone up and call. And you don't have to solve the problems. You just have to say, I love you and I'm thinking about you. And you'd be surprised at what starts to fall into place after you just reach across that void a little bit. I can think of a million examples like that. But remember, like I was talking about the chemistry, this is part of the law of the universe, okay? You're supposed to do that. So reach out to a friend. That's why they say it's never too late, because it really isn't. It's never too late to start to repair relationships. If you were angry at your parents because maybe they didn't fix their relationship when you were growing up and it messed you up, okay, that happens. But if you're an adult now, then you need to go do your part to repair that relationship. I'm struggling with the words right now because I don't have the words for that kind of happiness. I've been distant from my children before. If you're feeling lonely, the other person is also hurting from that discord. And Christ really is the secret to healing all of our discord. I've said that to people before and they're like, what? And I've given talks on it and they're like, that's it? I'm like, no, that's everything. That is the solution to all discord, is to put Christ into any relationship. You've got to have Christ in there, because then you have the grace to have the right kind of empathy, to have the patience and understanding, to spend the time to get to know the other person the way you should. And only then, when you get to the center of that other person, do you start to actually be able to look at the world through the other person's eyes. And you pull it all together. Don't you love our faith? Don't you see how it just, you can take anything that teaches Catholic doctrine and apply it to modern solutions, and everything just makes sense. I'm Stacey Trasenkos in for Timory. I will be here next Tuesday. God bless you.